This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Aslin, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with
Arvind Yuvaraj,
Christine Wong.
We are going to be with you all the way until 1 o'clock. Of course, it is Enterprise Biz Bytes. Some interesting stories brought to you from the world of business and tech this afternoon. Stories revolving around space boots.
Space boots.
Not those fancy, you know, kind of fashion-based space boots, but actual space boots.
Actual space boots that can be used in space.
A new dating app called Mate. M8.
Great.
Yeah, no. We'll get to that in a minute. Something called Ulfgaard. This is not some kind of Norse god. It is something else, right?
No, it's a machine.
It's a machine. We're then talking about Augmedics.
Yes.
What is that?
Augmented reality medics.
All right. And then we're finishing up with a story about how Pirate Bay have been a little bit more naughty than they've already been naughty, if that makes sense.
They're just being naughtier.
They're being naughtier, yes. So let's talk about these magnificent space boots, Arvin.
Yeah. So, you know.
It's always you.
Yeah, with the boots
the
and the gloves.
This is the thing, right? Like, because Arvin was talking about that that bionic glove yesterday, this just seems the most appropriate follow-up story to that.
Right. So we've had a boot. We're having boots today. Boots, we've had gloves. Have we had anything? We had the helmet not too long ago.
The bulletproof
helmet or whatever it was.
All of the other wearable technology we've covered, like
he's
the tattoos.
He's just building
and the
himself some kind of weird suit, isn't he?
It's so Captain Quantum.
Today it's boots and it's a nose.
Oh, boots and a nose. Okay, fine. Give me the boots first.
Okay, so the boots. This is actually for astronauts, and they say that the biggest problem when you, you know, when you go into space is that you can't feel the ground that you're walking on.
That's the biggest problem. I think that you can't breathe in a vacuum is pretty, you know.
Yeah. I mean, once you pass that stage, then once you can, then the biggest problem is not being able to feel where you're walking on. I mean, they say that the helmets don't have, your vision from the helmets is not that good.
Yeah.
Then the pressurized suit kind of makes it even worse.
15 layers, I think those suits have something
that. And then, I mean, even when you wear like normal shoes, you can't feel the ground that you're walking on, and they have like boots that are way heavier and are pressurized as well. So they can't actually tell the kind of terrain that they're stepping on once they're there, and it's completely unfamiliar. So these guys at Draper Labs, what they've done is they've developed a boot that's outfitted with sensors and feedback motors, and which generate like tactile response based on the ground that they can detect. So the boots are similar to any standard heavy-duty boot. It's just way heavier, and it's built for the suit itself. You can't feel any of the fine detail on the ground, but that's the problem that they have with the older ones that they're using now, the astronaut suit. And you can't do it with this boot either. So when they say that you can feel, it's actually feel in like air quotes.
Right.
It's feel because the sensors and the haptic feedback kind of pick up the bumps and the cracks and stuff, and then it feeds that into your helmet's what do you call it,
like HUD, your head up
HUD. Exactly. So then you can see, like, you can sort of see what kind of ground that you're walking on.
Very cool.
Yeah.
But does anybody think that maybe we haven't been on the moon for almost 40 years and perhaps this is a technology that we don't need quite just yet?
Yeah, I think they're preparing this for when they go to Mars,
right?
Yeah.
Which is when, another 40 years away?
If you give it to like Elon Musk, he'll say like it's next year. He's planning for next year.
Is he? Yeah, but you see his suit. Do you think he's going to have these kind of haptic boot feedback?
No.
He's going to have something way cooler, right?
Yeah. I think he's going to make it lighter, if anything.
At any rate, if astronauts don't, trip over themselves in space, I think that would just be very helpful for everyone involved. Because it's something that you don't really think about, right? Like, especially when you think about space and you're like, oh, it's so cool, but like, you don't even know what you're stepping on. You don't even know if there's a crater there, and gravity is different as well, which might make it very difficult for people to move around. So even though this is not necessarily a technology that is, useful for everyone, it's still a cool thing that they even had to take that into consideration,
I mean, I would like a boot that would tell me, where to walk and where not to walk.
Yeah.
It could be quite useful.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you say it's not for everyone, because these guys at Draper, the labs, they're saying that they want to use this tech here on Earth if they can develop it more, then they want to use it for people who have like who are blind or they can't see or have visual like impairments and stuff. So if they have a helmet and they have like a voice that tells them what the ground feels like or what they are approaching, then it could be useful for them as well.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, that is good.
And it says that this one, it has like all kinds of tech jargon. It's called vibro-tactile boots.
Oh.
They can also see the world around them using a built-in ultrasonic range finder as well as proximity detectors.
One of those kind of things.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Good story.
Very nice.
Would you be buying these to outfit yourself then? Is this part of the getup, do you think? Or are we waiting for something better?
Something better. Something that has like jetpacks.
Yeah, you need rockets installed in the soles,
lift up.
Anyway, moving along. A story involving algorithms and your mates.
Mm.
So forget algorithms. Mate, spelled M8, it's a dating app that's powered by human matchmakers, and they aren't just any matchmakers. They're your friends.
Uh-oh.
This sounds to me like a recipe for disaster, right? So I'll just tell you more details
especially first. Especially when it had the word friends.
Right, exactly. So they're unveiling it. It's a concept for a different type of dating app where your friends can look through dating apps to find the perfect match for their friends, and if they're successful, they can be rewarded with gifts and, more importantly, the satisfaction of finding their best friend a new lover. Right. So first off, your friends can help find you a match. In doing so, they are given rewards.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said outside, Christine, this is like a recipe for trolling of disastrous proportions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? If you have a friend who you know is single, you can get free stuff by setting him up with anybody.
Oh.
Right? This is worrying. You know, but let me tell you more about it. So it's the co-founder and CEO is this guy called Stephen Liu, said he had the idea because he and his wife started dating after a friend vouched for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he co-founded the platform with his wife, of course, Linda, and he said that today's online dating is flawed. He believes the best matches come from people. In a world where Tinder matches are based on photos, he believes that a personal written endorsement from a friend will provide so much more.
So what it is your friend basically reads another person's romantic CV and then tells you if you should go on a date with that person.
Pretty much, yeah.
That doesn't sound like the best idea. I can't really put my finger on why.
So they've managed to raise $700,000, of course, from the Alibaba Group, who are investing heavily in this program. I think it's an interesting idea, but I don't know. I mean, I've got some very close friends, and I would not ever trust them to suggest for me somebody I should go and date. I just wouldn't, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that, okay, it might be nice to go and meet somebody for the first time, you know, perhaps make friends or whatever. If they're doing it in that idea, I think it's a good idea. But I trust my own gut over everybody else's.
I think also what I find really worrying about it is that they then get rewarded
for
setting you up. That's really weird. Because, like, also, what are they getting rewarded with?
Money.
Oh, gosh. Like, then, I mean, so you can earn money by just sending your friends on terrible, terrible dates.
Yeah.
Guys, there's no quality control
Not only that, but there's a business prospect in here. I mean, if you think about it, if you have like 1,500 Facebook friends or above, something like that, you join this app, you've got a whole bunch of friends on there. You know, you could start selling these kind of recommendations.
Oh my goodness.
You know?
And also, this concept is not exactly new. It's just that before this, it came in the form of like elderly aunties.
See, I wasn't going to. I'm glad you brought that up. I wasn't going to do it, but I'm glad you did. Yeah. I can see a whole bunch of aunties signing up for this. My son is the best person ever.
In the world.
In the world. Mm-hmm. He came second in the race and blah, blah, blah.
He's got 3 degrees and they're all in science related fields.
Or that one family friend who knows like the guy's family and also knows the girl's family. And you're like, how do you know? So many
they
people.
They are the worst. They are the worst, I tell you.
Yeah.
Anyway, let us know what you think. Would you sign up for a dating app where your friend offers you suggestions and, in fact, is the person that recommends you to other people? Yeah. Anyway, get in touch on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us. We are at BFM Radio. When we come back, we have a story about a fake nose.
Mm-hmm.
AlphaGuard.
It's a machine nose.
It's a machine nose. We'll be right back after these messages. You are listening to Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Christine Wong.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
We are with you all the way through until 1 o'clock. You've got us for about another 40 minutes. You can't get rid of us unless you turn your dial. I suggest you don't do that.
Mm.
Ever. Thank you. Right, that was a public service announcement. Now, more stories coming up. We've got a story about a fake nose, electronic nose, I should say, that is used for smelling pathogens in food factories.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of this.
Yeah, so there was this recent deadly outbreak of Salmonella that affected like 200 people in like eastern and southern United States. And because of this, they were trying to find out like where this outbreak came from, and then they found that the culprit were like papayas coming from three different distribution companies that were all in farms in Mexico. So what after they found out, so these distributors and then the FDA and then the CDC were all like scrambling and then trying to find out how to stop it and then how to make to stop the papayas from spreading into like other places and other stores, right? And meanwhile law firms then they stepped in and then they started, it became like a big court case and stuff. So whenever there's an outbreak like this, it's pretty expensive and a lot of people get involved and it takes a long, long time to find out where the outbreak originated from. That's where these guys step in. Their name AlphaGuard, that's the name of the startup.
Okay.
Yeah, and they've come up with an electronic sniffer. It's like a small box-looking machine. And
don't we already have electronic sniffers, though? Electronic noses?
They say this can do it faster than anything that we have. So I think what they're focusing on is the time that it takes to figure out if something is contaminated, is off.
Right.
Yeah. So they're based in Toronto, these guys, and they say that they're working to reduce the time it takes for food manufacturers to discover foodborne pathogens like Salmonella in the food that we buy. The machine also works by picking up on possible pathogens it runs it through the system and then it comes out with results. And so far, the lab test that they have done, there's like a 94% accuracy, which is pretty good. And now what they're trying to do is they're trying to make it work within a couple of like a few hours instead of taking like 1 or 2 weeks. So this is how it works. Like the traditional methods for detecting pathogens in food. One, it's by taking a culture and developing it in a petri dish. It takes about 36 to 48 hours.
Yeah.
And then two, it's by using a machine that's much more expensive and it's hooked up to like a PCR microchip to get those results in like 8 to 14 hours. So these guys, I think, are trying to do it within 4 to 6 hours at most.
That's a huge, difference.
Yeah, it makes a huge thing, especially when it's food. And especially
when it's in a factory where everything needs to be running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. You know, having that downtime reduced from whatever it was, 36 to 48 hours to 6.
48 hours, like how many hundreds of people could pick up food in 48 hours? It's insane.
Yeah.
And then now they're training the sensors to be able to discover pathogens online, which means like in real time. And that's what they say. So they're saying that we do it today in 6 hours, but we want to bring it to a place where we can do it in zero time.
So they this.
Yeah. They can basically just sniff the, quote unquote, sniff the pathogen and then know if there's like, if something's wrong with it.
See, this is one of those technologies that really, really defines the term of prevention is better than cure. You know what I mean? If you can sniff out the pathogens even before they hit the shelves and then you can stop it right there and then. Like, this is going, if this technology does, is able to detect those pathogens in real time and start to do it, immediately. I mean, all food manufacturers benefit so much from this because it saves them so much time and so much money to cure, the problem if it ever comes up. So, I mean, this is great. I'm mostly just sad that the whole thing came from papayas because I love those.
Mm.
Is this thing already... Does it exist now already?
It does.
It does.
It does. It's going through, they're testing it in the lab, so it hasn't been used to test like actual food in the real world and stuff. They're just using it to test food samples that they've probably like infected on purpose to see if it can pick it up. That's where the 94% accuracy comes from. But 94% is like a pretty good number.
Yeah.
And if they can develop it more, it could go up to like 96, 98, 99.
I mean, I remember in the late 80s in the UK, there was a massive Salmonella outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of papayas, you'll be glad to know.
Woo!
But because of eggs. A lot of the eggs were not being looked after properly. A whole bunch of farms were infected with the Salmonella.
Mm-hmm.
And they got into the food chain and it became such a big issue. That there were factories being closed down and people going bankrupt and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A tech like this back then would have saved, hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds.
People, yeah.
And people's jobs, in fact.
Yeah. And what I like is that they're saying that they're not doing this to save any factories, like the cost. It's not supposed to be cheap.
Mm.
What they want to do is just speed up the time. So they've said that they're not interested in saving anyone any money.
Okay.
They just want to make sure that people have this device so they can test their food like on the go and nothing that's contaminated or nothing that's dangerous gets out and into shelves and stuff. they've given a quote. It says that we provide an affordable method, but I don't want to save money for the factories. I want to double and triple output within the same budget of what they are doing.
Right. Hmm. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay, time for some more music. We've got Tegan and Sarah coming up with a little bit of Closer. After that, Christine will be regaling us with a story about Augmedics. I love the name of that.
So Augmedics. Good.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Right, don't go anywhere. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Breaking Financial Matters, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. So far, if you're only just joining us, we've had stories about space boots, mates for your dates, AlphaGuard, which is a mechanical electronic nose that can sniff for pathogens in factories. Now Christine's going to talk to us about this thing called Augmedics.
Yeah, so basically Augmedics is an Israeli startup that what they're doing is they're working on augmented reality headsets for surgeons who perform spinal surgery.
Oh.
So this is the thing, right? Already, you know, surgery is a very tough thing. You have to go through lots and lots of all the schools and the education and stuff to even know how to do that to a person. And nowadays, a lot of surgeries are assisted by computers. It's nothing new. A lot of surgeons will look at a screen while performing an operation so they can, you know, they can keep track of their tools. They can see what's happening in the body. But this is something different. So the actual technology, the headset itself is called Visor with a Z because, you know, you have to put a Z in it because it's cool, I guess. But what it is it acts as a kind of heads-up display and it gives you enhanced perception of you know, when you're conducting the surgery. So it's a kind of like glasses. It's like eyewear with clear glasses. But what it does, it projects the patient's spine in 3D.
Oh, wow.
And you can always locate your tools in real time, even if it's below the skin. And it has sensors that detect your head movements as well. So you can basically get, you know, a proper idea of exactly what you're operating on with these glasses. So how this works is the co-founder and CEO of Augmedics, Nissan Eli Malek, says that what they're doing is they project the patient's CT scans. So they're not using like an X-ray or anything to do that, but they use the CT scans to then project a 3D model of the spine, and then they project that onto the headset, and then so the surgeons can go through it. So basically how spinal surgery works is that hospitals have to segment the spine from the rest of the scan first. So, you know, there's so much else going on in the body, they have to, okay, so this is exactly where the spine is. And they already have all the tools they need to do that. So, you know, Visor doesn't need to do that for them. And then doctors have to place markers on the patient's body to register the location of the spine. That way, even if the patient moves while breathing, Visor can automatically adjust the position of the spine in real time.
Right.
So they basically will feed back, you know, all of that information. They will also need to put markers on their tools themselves. So when all these markers are in place, Visor can then read all of that data, feed it back into the heads-up display, and it can precisely display the orientations of the tools during the operation, the orientation of the spine during the operation. And according to Augmedics, it only takes 10 to 20 seconds to calibrate everything.
It's Waze for the spine.
Mm. In
hologram.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's absolutely crazy just because, like, the device also lets you visualize the implants themselves before you even put them in. So you know exactly where they're going, you know exactly how they're going to work, and you know even when they move, how they're going to move in the body. And the overall system accuracy is about 1.4 millimeters, and the FDA requires a level of accuracy below 2 millimeters. So technically, the company, while the specs are technically FDA approved, they haven't been officially FDA approved, but they're working on it. And it could still take a year or two before Augmedics can sell Visor to hospitals in the US. But some surgeons have actually already tried it. And
This is incredible.
Mm.
Yeah, like the 50 spine surgeons that actually gave it a shot and tried the technology were completely overwhelmed because
right.
they really felt like, you know, the level of precision could never be accomplished with just human knowledge.
I'm wondering if something like this would be kind of used in stuff like, you know, brain surgery, where it, obviously, as we know, it's incredibly delicate. And
yeah.
I don't know what the kind of leeway there is. 2 millimeters, I'm imagining, in a brain is a big difference.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But
I mean, already neurosurgeons, yeah, they do use similar navigation systems,
yeah.
but not to, you know, I guess not to this extent. And Because what it is is that the kind of technology that neurosurgeons use is similar, but I don't know if it's as accurate or if it does that. Because I think the appeal of the visor itself is that it's projected in that display and the whole real-time aspect of it and everything like that. So it's one of those things where they are hoping to maybe branch out with who they can market this technology to, because spine surgery is quite a niche market to be selling this to. So they are thinking about maybe, after a point to think about how they could use this for neurosurgery as well. But what Eli Malek has said is that they're going to be reasonably competitive with other products. At the moment, current systems on the market cost between about $200,000, which is approximately 838,600 ringgit. And the higher end of that is $500,000, which is approximately 2,096,500 ringgit.
So these are things that are going to be in private hospitals first.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, of course it is, right? Yeah. This is one of those things as well where this technology is always going to go, unfortunately, to, you know, the hospitals that can afford it first. Mm. But it's still so, so cool, because spinal surgery has to be so delicate and precise. And the fact that, you know, even though it is a relatively niche market, it's a problem that, you know, nowadays, especially with the advent of technology, we're all like, you know, we're hunching over our computers and spinal. I think that it's, even the fact that it can process all of that information and spit it back out at you in a couple of seconds is ridiculous to me, right? So
these are like X-ray glasses.
Yeah.
CT scans.
Yeah, like CT scans. But the stuff that they've been, you know how X-ray glasses used to show up in like comic books when you flip the page in the ads, it's like, oh, X-ray glasses for like $2.
Yeah.
They never worked.
Of course not.
Yeah. But these are like actual very expensive X-ray glasses.
Yeah, I mean, the surgeons that have tried it out have actually said that it makes them feel like a superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I don't believe. So maybe right there, we need this for your Captain Quantum.
I was going to say, so that we have the eyes, the nose, and we have the feet.
Yeah, and the gloves.
And the gloves.
And the gloves. Yeah.
And the helmet.
Nice.
Oh, boots too as well. All right. We're almost getting there, Arvin. Almost getting there. Right. Time for some music. A little bit of the Manic Street Preachers up next with Australia. We'll be right back after these messages when we come back with our final story, how the Pirate Bay have been borrowing your CPU if you visited their website. If you've visited their website.
No, I don't know what that is. Pirate Bay, you say?
I don't know what that is.
What,
right.
What is that?
I don't know. We'll be right back after these messages. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Bigotry Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. That was Joe Hashem. In the studio with me right now is
Arvind Yuvraj.
And Christine Wong.
Final story of the day. Piracy websites, right? You may have heard one or two of these. Pirate Bay. Do you know yesterday was International Talk Like a Pirate Day? Did you know that?
Oh,
well, we didn't. So
now you do, and we missed that opportunity.
Darn it!
But so we're making up for it today.
We missed a ship.
He did it. Didn't he?
I don't know whether to high five you or roll my eyes or both.
Both.
Just kick his wooden leg, knock him over. Right. Anyway, so the Pirate Bay, I'm sure you've all heard about it. It's a torrent-based search website. So piracy websites, they can't really depend on ads, obviously. So how do they make money? By using your PC's processor cycles, apparently, whether you want to or not. So visitors to the Pirate Bay, they discovered JavaScript code in the website that borrows your processor for the sake of mining Monero digital coins. Monero are another cryptocurrency. It doesn't always happen. It mainly happens in search results and some category listings, but you'll definitely notice a sharp spike in CPU usage when it does in fact kick in. Pirate Bay themselves told the website Torrent Freak that they were testing the feature for about 24 hours as a new way of generating revenue, and that it could eventually be enough to replace ads. So in short, don't be surprised if this becomes a mainstay of the site going forward. Users have found that they can block the miner through their browser settings or add-ons like ad blockers and whatever, so it's not inescapable. So without warning, however, many inexperienced visitors won't even realize what's happening, let alone figure out how to stop it. That's the real concern. Whilst there isn't much sympathy to be had for a pirate site that's eager for revenue, the unsuspecting visitors are another story. They didn't ask, they didn't want their system to kind of be bogged down and whatever. But I don't know. Is it a small price to pay for getting your latest episode of the world's top most pirated TV show, for example?
What would that be?
That would be Game of Thrones. I hear from what I'm told.
I like how there's like a guideline of what you should do and how you can block this. Mm. You're not supposed to be doing it in the first place.
Well, let's be honest. It was one of those websites that people tried to block.
Mm.
Yeah, they moved, and then they moved to Iceland, and they moved somewhere else. And
at this point, just
I don't even know where they are anymore.
Let it run its course. You know what I mean? Once it's been that evasive, you just got to kind of be like, okay,
you can't sell. You can't have a country that sells pirated DVDs and then try and block a website that sells that, you know, gives the same stuff away. You know, the irony of that is just, you know.
And the actual shops that still exist that sell these DVDs.
All over the place.
Yeah. Yes. In fact,
we could walk 2 minutes away from here and we could probably find somewhere that sells that kind of stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, the bigger question is, though, you know, are we annoyed by this? Is this something that would stop people from visiting that particular website? Or do you just think, well, meh?
I mean, this is the thing, right? Like, at this point, if you're going to go to a website like that, you probably already know that stuff like that might happen. You know, because if you're technologically savvy enough to be able to use a torrent website or anything like that, then, you know, there's also a part of you that already is aware, you know, of like
all
the pop-ups and the risks and the whatever.
Mm.
So at this point, it's not nice of them to be doing that, but also it's a pirating website.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you've got to just kind of take it as it is.
You kind of sign up for a little bit of that by visiting the website or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, the way torrents work is that you store some of that information on your PC. So every single person who has downloaded the file is contributing to the next person who's downloading the file. The more peers you have, the faster the download. It's like a community thing.
I mean,
as weird as that sounds.
Yeah.
So when you go to like Pirate Bay or any of these other torrent sites, then you are like literally opening up your hard drive to for these connections to source the information from you.
Yeah.
What they did is just they're using those connections to mine Bitcoin for themselves.
I think it's quite clever.
And also for people who don't know anything about or aren't really invested in Bitcoin, then like who cares really?
Right. Monero. Not Bitcoin this time.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Just
yeah.
Slightly different one, but same principle
like
applies.
I
mean, unless it heats up your system to a point where your PC has to shut down by itself, I don't think a lot of people are even going to notice that this is happening.
Well, my laptop is like that all the time lately.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Folks at home, if you've got a spare laptop, you can donate, you know, at the BFM offices.
if you have two, that'd be great.
Yeah, please throw it this way. Right, it's time for us to wrap up the show, of course. We've got a few minutes left, so we'll quickly run through the stories that we covered today. First off, Arvin.
Yeah, we spoke about space boots. So these boots are going to potentially allow astronauts to see the kind of ground and terrain that they're stepping on.
So the boots were made for walking?
next, anyway, next story was mate wants your friends to be your matchmaker. We decided we didn't like that idea very much.
Just to overshadow like older aunties.
And
take them out of their jobs.
You then had?
Yeah, then I had Olfagard. It's a machine, electronic nose that is supposed to sniff out pathogens in food.
It knows where the bad stuff is.
Mm.
We then had a story about...
Yes, so Augmedics, an Israeli startup, is building augmented reality glasses for spinal surgery.
And then, of course, we finished off with a story about how the Pirate Bay have borrowed visitor CPUs to mine for virtual coins. Read up more about that over on torrentfreak.org if you're interested. Now, don't go anywhere because after the 1 o'clock news, we do have the Breakfast Grill replay, of course. It was Mohamed Fahmy Mohamed Ilyas, the CEO of QuickRide. They're a new service that aims to lease Proton cars to prospective Uber drivers. They helped us look and understand their business model and viability, as well as the outlook on the ride-sharing and transport industry of Malaysia. That's coming up right after the news at 1 o'clock. And of course, if you missed any part of this show, download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play and listen to us a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. On behalf of myself, Christian Wong, and Arvin Yuvaraj, this has been Enterprise BizBytes. We will be back tomorrow from the same time, same place, from deepest, darkest Banda Otama. You are listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you.